Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations.
This episode of Groundwire was produced on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit by the Groundwire National Coordination Team.
We are your hosts, Ome Salma
and Noreen Rahmatullah. In this episode,
not a lot of people know Parker Wetlands is here, first of all, and even less people know that this was a Métis community of Rooster Town in Tintown.
Canada 150 was just awful. The blind patriotic pride was sickening to my stomach.
But first, here are the headlines.
Our first headline comes from Jasmine Chapman at CFRC in Kingston, Ontario.
The funding of universal pharmacare has been debated in the House of Commons for years. A Kingston, Ontario resident, Catherine Bell Stood, took interest in the issue as she was finding people on her street who were suffering. She decided to do something about it and to start an e-petition in support of universal pharmacare. The Government of Canada's e-petition site is the only petition site where petitions that receive the required number of signatures has to go to the House of Commons and must be tabled for discussion. On July 13th, the petition received 7,990 signatures from all around Canada and the world. It will now be brought to the House of Commons for discussion. This is Catherine Bell Stood talking about the severe need for universal pharmacare in Canada.
For 50 years plus, the issue of, well, are we going to roll in the universal pharmacare or not, has been debated in every session of government. It goes to health standing committees. It gets debated. Commissions are set up. People are asked their opinion about this. The answer is always uniformly, it's absolutely a requirement. The government hasn't acted on this. This is the issue. We encountered three families who had stories of family members who lost their homes because they could not pay for their mortgage, not having a secondary drug insurance plan, couldn't pay their mortgage, and they had multiple family members who were requiring drugs as a result of doctor's prescriptions.
This story has been brought to you by Jasmine Chapman for CFRC in Kingston, Ontario.
Our final headline comes from the Working Group on Indigenous Food Sovereignty in Vancouver, British Columbia.
Tsleil-Waututh elders, youth, children, and families are calling for an immediate shutdown of the Kinder Morgan Trans Mountain Pipeline in light of the forest fires raging through their territory. They fear the pipeline poses a serious safety hazard. They also say the unprecedented increase in fires is evidence of global warming created in part by Alberta tar sand oil transported by Kinder Morgan.
Tsleil-Waututh teacher Don Morrison and founder of the Working Group on Indigenous Food Sovereignty said that the community is in a critical state of emergency dealing with the impacts of climate change, including catastrophic flooding and fires, as well as social issues such as poverty, increased violence against women, and high rates of death from substance abuse. She added that the health of families and communities relies heavily on the ability to harvest wild salmon and access clean drinking water, both of which are at risk if the Kinder Morgan pipeline was ruptured or impacted by the fires.
The Tsleil-Waututh Assembly is demanding a moratorium on any pipeline proposing to transport crude or diluted bitumen through their vast traditional territory, where they are stewards of the forest, fields, and waterways that flow from the Rockies on their way to the ocean. The Assembly met last month to reaffirm its territorial title and authority, saying, quote, "We have never provided and will never provide our collective free, prior, and informed consent, the minimal international standard, to the Kinder Morgan Trans Mountain Pipeline Project. We explicitly and irrevocably refuse to passage through our territory. Investors, take note. There is no Tsleil-Waututh consent for Kinder Morgan. Kinder Morgan will not pass through Tsleil-Waututh territory," unquote.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back after this.
Trip, trip, trip. Soon the future, big, big box. metropolis devours. Last minute of the final hour, the last drop of oil fertilizing the soil. They speak everything, sitting on a brink. No air left to breathe, no water left to drink. No forest, no trees. Species gone extinct, our cultural titanic, and we're ready to sink. This whole society's been duped by gangs of oil and gas. Addicted, they need a hit of that crack petroleum. Execs with no soul in them, governments controlling them. ExxonMobil, BP, Shell, Rich Tarzan, paradise meet hell. From Alberta to Iraq, trapped in the cell, staring at the abyss. I choose to rebel against the demon machine and the poison oil well. Apocalypse now, trip, trip, drive. Driving off the peak, we at the tip, tip, top. Pedal to the metal, but the signs say stop. Now we over the edge, this culture's dead. Meet my spell, trip, trip, drive. Assume the future, big, big prize. We all gonna die if this shit don't stop. Time's running out, tick, tick, tock. We don't need oil, just break the spell. Alternatives exist, but they're locked in cells. By patents owned by Exxon and Shell. Protected by the cops while the toxins kill. Stop Enbridge and Keystone XL. I get poison when the oil starts to spill. None of them are safe, they always fail. Ecosystems die, they profit still. Drill, drill, baby drill. Grease their machines. Keep us all hooked to an American dream. That's turned into a nightmare quest for green machines. Looking for things like a violent fiend. So we rip up its veins right out of the ground. Dismantle the pipelines and block the rails. Find the tip of the pyramid, topple it down. If the tall sands expand, it's apocalypse now. Oh, apocalypse now. Trip, trip, drive. Driving off the peak, we at the tip, tip, top. Pedal to the metal, but the signs say stop. Now we over the edge, this culture is dead. Meet my spell, trip, trip, drive. Assume the future, big, big prize. We all gonna die if this shit don't stop. Time's running out, tick, tick, tock. The earth is bleeding, corporate vultures feeding on the car. His car gas fiending, American dreaming. Got to believe in it's endless, unless we change. It's useless, we need an alternative. Petroleum production peaking, but these pestilent politicians are speaking about Africa oil while the Athabasca boil. The future depleting, the people are breathing toxic fumes. Sucking on a tailpipe, look at how we living. Everybody knows this ain't right. Watching Avatar mean everybody hate life. Depressed that we've lost our connection and can't hide from our reflection.
Welcome back to Groundwire, your source for news from the ground up. Available online at groundwirenews.ca and airing on your local community radio station.
You just heard Oil Apocalypse Now by Test Their Logic from their album B. Now it's time for our feature stories. Gnarji O'Sullivan and Anushka Azadi reflect on Unsettling Canada 150 with live audio from the Vancouver event and caller Kanahaus Manuel on Vancouver Co-op Radio.
A lot of people were hurting, you know, at the beginning. Throughout the year, I've seen a lot of posts of from various people on my friends list, and they were talking about, you know, how they weren't really feeling it. They didn't know if they were going to celebrate it, or they didn't know what to think about it. And now here we are, one day after Canada Day, or 2 days now.
2 days now, I think it is. Yep.
Yesterday, I went to Unsettling. You went there as well.
Yeah, I got there pretty late, but it was still awesome. Mm-hmm. A lot of great speakers and performers and a great spirit there.
So I want to say, Wallace Gaiasica, thank you very much to all those performers who came first, all those performers who came before me, and those speakers, those young people to have the courage and stand up in their form of resistance. Whether it's spoken word, or song, or sharing words and shedding truth on the colonial powers that be, whether it's through the B&A Act, or residential schools, or the potlatch ban. Because 1884 to 1951, this was illegal. Under Canadian policy and law to have this many Indigenous people in the same place. But yet, here we are. Here we are. We're still here. We're still strong. And so my question to all of us, to all of you people who felt compelled to be here into the night, to tell a different narrative, to celebrate us as Indigenous peoples, as Heiltsuk peoples, what are we going to do in the future? How are we going to act?
How are we going to relate to one another that is not an oppressive or a patriarchal or a way that subsumes someone into the general Canadian politic? To quote John A. Macdonald in 1920, the architect of the Indian residential school system, the Canadian general politic. So what are we doing into the future? And I think this moment in time is why I was compelled to come up here, to relate in a community event, to share a different narrative, to share our own resistance, our own story. Canada 150 was just awful. The blind patriotic pride was sickening to my stomach. It literally made me feel ill being here in the city. I'm from the Central Coast. I hail from a very secluded place where we don't have big celebrations or massive deep sea ports. I come from a very isolated place, but being here on the edge of the knife was hard. But coming here was good medicine. It was good energy for me to take in, so I just felt the need to say Gayasika. Thank you to all the organizers, because we all know it takes a select few to really champion something like this. So I wanted a kahila to uplift them and thank them and thank all of you. Way, Wallace Gayasika.
I just wanted to point out that that was Saul Brown. From the Brown family, which is a really well-known family as well.
Kanahus, welcome to the show.
Hello, here I am.
How are you doing? I hear you're very busy.
Thank you to everybody in Vancouver and everyone listening that went out and created noise and went in the face of Canada to let them know, no, we're not celebrating Canada's 150. We're actually opposed to their occupation on our land and the colonization and assimilation that was forced on us. So it's so great to be on this show, and I'm glad that everybody came out and demonstrated for all of us.
Well, the theme of this year seems to be unsettling, which mostly I feel is driven by your father's book, Unsettling Canada. How does that feel for you to know that so many people are touched by his book?
I'm really touched. I love my father, and I've been thinking about him a lot during this last couple of days, and seeing how much people all across the country of Canada that came out to let their voices be heard, because there's people all across Canada that's been doing this work, Native people, Indigenous people, supporters and allies, regular Canadian citizens that took their time to come and educate people. And the big thing is like educating people the truth about what Canada means to us. And, you know, we hear the words genocide, we hear the words assimilation and, you know, land theft and all of these things. And we do need to explain it to the regular average Canadian citizen, because they're being taught all of these other things in the public school system. They're being taught everything else but the fact that this is our title, this is our land, and that it needs to be respected.
A story of civil disobedience taking place in Winnipeg in mid-July has made headlines locally and exploded across social media and prevented, at least temporarily, the destruction of land much loved by environmentalists, nature enthusiasts, and Indigenous advocates alike. Michael Welch of University of Winnipeg-based radio station CKUW 95.9 FM brings us this look at the controversy surrounding the fate of urban green space with special cultural, spiritual, and ecological significance.
On the early morning of Friday, July 14th, a group of about half a dozen people risked arrest when they took part in a direct action in a part of South Central Winnipeg. The individuals had surrounded heavy equipment being used to bulldoze a section of urban green space known as the Parker Wetlands. When warned by police that they were on private property, one of the activists, a Métis woman named Jenna, claimed they were actually situated on Native land.
Not a lot of people know Parker Wetlands is here, first of all, and even less people know that this was a Métis community of Roostertown in Tintown. You know, I told them the issue with the Native land question here, and I think that kind of changed the story a bit, because now they don't really know what to do, because now it's not just a municipal issue, it's also a federal issue with Crown responsibility to the Métis and First Nations people.
At least one lodge made of fallen logs, standing about 10 feet high and shaped like a teepee, was found within the still intact forest and pointed to the spiritual significance for First Nations in the area.
My legal name is Tyler McKinney. I'm here on behalf of the American Indian Movement Canada. When you look inside, you know that it was a ceremonial lodge. And it makes you wonder if one's here, then more likely than there are others here.
Beyond concerns for Aboriginal title, the Parker Wetlands and Aspen Forest serve as habitat for the Cooper's Hawk and other vulnerable plant and animal species.
My name is Neil Balchin. I'm a University of Manitoba student and a licensed falconer in the province of Manitoba. Obviously, it's a very old growth area. It holds a lot of water, so that has benefits for flooding. Given that high water, the area has a high productivity. There's a lot of insect life, a lot of amphibian life. And, you know, the integrity of the ecosystem just means it can maintain a wide biodiversity, a lot of animals and a lot of different plant species as well.
This area was formerly public land, but back in 2009, then-mayor of Winnipeg, Sam Katz, gave ownership of the Parker lands over to developer Andrew Marcus as part of a highly controversial land swap. Cal Duick of Parker Wetlands Conservation Committee, a citizens group seeking to protect the green space from destruction, explains.
Basically, the city gave it to him for nothing, right? 9 acres for 62. And then when they put the bus in here, they gave him $500,000 to take some land back. So, you know, he can't lose on this property. And that's part of the issue here. He wants $1.5 million to sell an acre. So that means he's thinking he'll make about $50 million off of housing in this area here.
For the time being, developer Marcus is not taking any provocative actions against the protesters on the property. In the meantime, defenders of the park, like Jenna Vandell, seem determined to stay on the front lines, at least during daytime hours. From Winnipeg, on occupied Anishinaabe territory and the homeland of the Métis Nation, this is CKUW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
The voices in the report included, in order of appearance, Jenna Vandell, Tyler McKinney, Neil Balkin, and Cal Duick. More information can be found on the Parker Wetlands Conservation Facebook page. That's it for our features. We'll be right back after this.
What have you seen in your short long life? Where did your tiny feet roam? All the things you have done on top of being a wife, a mother, a daughter, a home. What have you seen in your short long life? What has your heart overcome? The traditional ways that are hidden away can be revived by the beat of a drum. What have you seen in your short long life? What did those tiny hands do?
Those tiny hands
stretching, scraping, fixing and making, mending the skins that our souls fit within, stitching, nothing can undo.
What did those tiny hands do?
What have you seen in your short long life? What has your heart overcome? The traditional ways that are hidden away can be revived by the beat of a drum. What have you seen in your short long life? A witness to so many wrongs. Relocation, damnation, misinformation. Summation, our nation still strong. What have you heard in your short long life? When did they silence your voice? The stories they spun made you swallow your tongue, made you feel like it was your choice.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Long life, what has your heart overcome? The tradition.
Quantum Tangle's Tiny Hands from their Juno Award-winning album.
Welcome back to Groundwire, your source for news from the ground up. Available online at groundwirenews.ca and airing on your community radio station. Now it's time for our community radio report.
CKUT Campus Community Radio Station in Montreal, Quebec helped organize a fundraiser for the Kwariwanonon Mohawk Immersion School, and Wen Tahawi, an organizer at the school, came to speak at the event.
So before we begin, we just wanted to acknowledge that this event takes place on the unceded territory of the Ganiagahaga people. We're also here to materially support the Gariwanoron Mohawk Immersion School, which is a super important project that's been ongoing for more than 30 years to promote Indigenous linguistic survival and self-determination. We would like to welcome Wen Tahawi Elijah, who is a teacher at the Kariwanoron School, who will be speaking a little bit more about that project.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Wen Tahawi Dion Elijah Yujats, Ganawat Geheronu. Ganawage Gidaru, Danu Okwari, Wakskarewage Okwari Niwagitaroda. So I said, welcome. My name is Wen Tahawi Dion Elijah. I am from Ganawage, Mohawk. my clan is Bear Clan, and I just want to thank everybody, Watkunu Haradu, Zawagwegu. Thank you, and for everything, for everybody that is here for this wonderful fundraiser. Thank you, the Midnight Kitchen, also, for having this event for our school that we were struggling to keep going. I'd like to share a little bit about myself to the language and the school and how I fit into it. First, I would. Raised at home with my mother and my grandmother, and my grandmother, as a first language speaker, only spoke to me also in Ganyakeha, in Mohawk, since the day I was born. It was actually my grandmother's, one of her ideas about putting this school together, the idea of Gariwanoru. It started off a couple of parents, a group coming together and discussing, I guess, about the fear of where we are and the endangeredness of losing our language and culture. So they thought my grandmother's idea of the best way of learning, I guess, in a natural way, as a natural environment, in your home, with your family. So the idea, the aspect of Gariwanoru is a very home-based environment, in a home, very small classes. I think we have rules of only going up to, I think, 12. 12, I think the most we've ever had was 15 in a class. And each class always consists of two teachers, and the reason for that is the ideal of being in a home with two parents or an aunt or, you know, that support in learning language, and also, like, not only from the teacher teaching the children, but the two teachers speaking with each other, like in a home where you listen and pick up and learn words from listening them to speaking. So back in 1988, when they brought a few parents coming together with their children, there was about like maybe 6-7 of us, and I was one of the first students that started Gariwanoru. I was about 4 years old, and the location also had a big influence of learning our ways, because it was kind of like we call it the bush. So surrounded by our natural life. So we learned, first of all, number one, everyday teaching is love and respect. And every morning before we start our day and when we end our day, we start and end with an opening and a closing. And it's a Thanksgiving address to all of nature, all living things, and keeping that respect. So one of the things that, you know, for example, I'll do say of people, we would say, so giving thanks to all of people, all people, that there still is meaning that we still have respect for all living things and for each other. So these are like, that's one example of one of the teachings that we do every single day. And also ceremonies, also teach them ceremonies. Just trying to bring back everything that I guess was somewhat becoming lost in the, you know, of our ways and our way of being and our what helps us and who we are. Our ceremonies are everything about our culture helps us. We have all the tools we have for healing, for you know, keeping us strong. We have it all. But we just need to practice it more and more. And that's where we struggle right now, is that we don't get any fundings or any outside money to help us to continue our ways of being and not losing who we are, because the government, you know, they don't want to give us anything unless we follow their curriculum and what they want us to learn, which is not, you know, which is not what we want to do. We want to stay true to ourselves and our culture and pass that on. So I'm here today to help help you understand and learn a little bit more about this school and how it started.
Thanks to Carolyn Huang of CKUT for recording the audio.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced on the traditional territories of the Mississaugas of the New Credit by the Groundwire National Coordination Team.
Music this week was by Test Their Logic and Quantum Tangle.
We thank all our amazing contributors for this episode, as well as Gretchen King and Carly Forbes.
Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca.